This is Audible.
Villains in Vodka, Top Shelf, Volume 2 by Alta Hensley. Narrated by Samantha Prescott and Teddy Hamilton. 1. Harley Crow. My life has been one long, fevered dream, balancing between being killed or killing. Though I was not afraid to die, I was already dead, for you cannot live without a soul. I was the creature you did not want to see in the shadows of an alley. I was death. I was evil. I was a man who played God, but really was the devil in disguise. I was an assassin. A killer. The villain in this story. I own it. I chose this life. Hell, I craved it. I hungered for it. The smell of fear made my dick hard and was the very reason the blood ran through my veins. I would not apologize for what I did or who I was. The time of guilt had long passed many deaths ago. The name Harley Crow was one to be feared, and I took fucking pride in that fact. The more people who feared me, the more money I made. Fear also kept me safe. Or safer. Don't mess with Harley Crow, they say, and my reply was always damn straight. As I stared out a single-pane window with a gun on my lap ready to kill, I inhaled deeply. I had to absorb the bad, soak in the fact that I was about to kill a man. It was my job, and what I'd been hired to do. One task. Bullet through the head. I had two guns, one that would shoot far enough to kill, and one to keep near me for protection if someone were to enter the room or try to snag my ass during escape. The guns had names. They all had names with letters and numbers attached, but I didn't give a fuck what they were called. They were guns, plain and simple, metal, black or silver, and could kill. I guess it was safe to say I wasn't a gunman. Odd for an assassin, and could be downright dangerous not fully knowing the tools of your trade, but all I cared about was how far did it shoot, what kind of bullets did it take, and how much it was to purchase. Black and white. Keep all that AK number bullshit to yourself. I had no time or desire to care. Not anymore. I wasn't always like that. Quite opposite, in fact. I used to make my own bullets, knew every single detail about every gun I owned. I once thrived off of being involved in the illegal gun trade so that I could get the best of the best before anyone else had a chance to. My life revolved around weapons, and the weight and smell of one could get me harder quicker than a naked woman could. I spent my every waking hour at the range honing my skills. I wanted to be unsurpassed by anyone, and I had made that fact a reality. I lived and breathed becoming the most lethal killer I could be. There was an art to it, a pride I fucking loved for the skill it required. But not now. Yes, I was still lethal, but I no longer cared if I was the best. At this stage in my life, hand me a fucking gun, point at the guy who needed to be dead, and I was done. Mission accomplished. I had been the vicious predator most of my life, and made my billion in doing so. But today, now, I just didn't give a fuck. I didn't really give a fuck about much. It was time to retire, I guess you could say. I knew this. I even went into business with others in a gentleman's club called Spiked Roses, my first legit business venture. But an assassin couldn't just give his notice and collect his pension. An assassin doesn't just break away from the darkness, not until you lay him down in the cold ground. My fate had been sealed the day I killed my first man for pay. Tired and over it, I still was an assassin, a tattoo forever marked on my soul. I even used to want to know all about my victim before I pulled the trigger. I wanted to learn what he'd done to deserve a bullet through the back of his skull. I was even the sick fuck who wanted to know what his last meal was before his death. I would stalk my prey for days to try and see a glimpse of evil that gave me cause to end his life. But not anymore. I realized it didn't matter. A good man would believe no one deserved to be assassinated no matter what. But like I said, I was not a good man. The truth was that I believed everyone deserved the bullet. Darkness and evil ran in all of us. There were no innocents in this life other than children, and that would soon change. Age made us bad. Maturity poisoned us. Just like the man across the way who sat at a cheap particle board desk in his office. He shredded papers with shaking hands and beads of sweat dripping off his brow. He had a secret. They all had secrets. Secrets that got them killed. He needed to stand so I could get a clean shot, which meant I had to wait. Wait while the sweaty bastard worked to destroy whatever evidence I didn't give a shit about was hidden on those papers. All that concerned me was that the man had a huge bounty on his head, and I would be collecting it by dawn. Cracking my knuckles, I tried to fight off the anxious tension in my hands. I needed a cigarette, but I had given that habit up recently. Ironic that I was worried about my health when the bounty on my own head was higher than any job I'd ever done in the past, or that I was likely to do in the future. I was walking dead, but I still didn't want to die with a breathing tube jammed in my throat. My voice already sounded like I had swallowed a box of jagged glass, and the last thing I needed was to be lugging around an oxygen tank and have plastic sticking out of my nostrils. No thank you. Hard to give off the bad boy tattoo-covered killer look while wheezing for air. I wasn't in my young 20s anymore, but I sure as hell wasn't an old bastard, yet my lungs felt like it at times. But I still wanted a cigarette. Fuck. Judging by the large stack of papers needing to be destroyed beside my soon-to-be victim's desk, I knew I could be sitting on this metal folding chair for several hours. My only hope was him needing to stand up and take a piss or stretch his legs. Maybe I would be lucky, and he'd walk over to the window to stare out of it and make my job really easy. But I had done enough of these gigs to know that nothing about them was ever easy. It took patience, a shitload of patience. My need for a cigarette only grew with the ruckus from the room up above. The sounds of shouts, bangs, crying, screaming. I wasn't in the mood to listen to some dude beat up his old lady in this piece-of-shit apartment building. It made my skin crawl hearing her plead. And no matter how hard I tried to not pay attention, they grew louder. I had one rule as an assassin. Leave women alone. I'd never killed a single woman and never would. And I sure as shit wouldn't beat on one. What the hell was the man doing to her, motherfucker? Not being able to take it any longer, I stood up, placed the handgun in the waistband against my spine, and charged out the door. This was stupid of me. I knew I didn't need to be drawing attention to being in the building at all. I'd already had to bribe the landlord $1,000 to open the unoccupied apartment's door, and had thrown in an extra $100 bill to reward him when he didn't ask a single question as I carried nothing but a black duffel bag through the entryway. The man even had provided me with a chair, although I didn't think Mr. Landlord would be too pleased if I beat up one of his tenants for being an abusive asshole. He didn't want the cops beating on his door, and I didn't blame him. But enough was enough. I knocked on the door of apartment 623. I was half tempted to just kick it in, but I would give the dickhead a chance to apologize and back down with his tail between his legs. The door opened, and a greasy-haired white man dressed in a dirty, wrinkled dress shirt and baggy black slacks greeted me in a way that only a fool would had he known who I was. "What the fuck do you want?" he asked. Booze permeated his breath, and his pupils were dilated. Drunk and high meant I had to be careful. These types of fuckers don't scare easily. A look and a warning would not be enough. I didn't answer his question, but pushed my way inside the apartment.
"Who the hell do you think you are? You can't just barge in here."
He reached for my arm, which was a big mistake. I do not like being touched by dirty hands. By dirty anything. Who knew where those hands had been, and I didn't want them touching me. I spun my body enough to avoid his filthy touch and reached behind me for my gun. Pulling it out and pointing it at his head didn't make him instantly cower. I didn't expect it to. He was too fucked up to process that he was about to be killed. I would have to make it very clear to his dumbass. "Touch me and die," I warned with a calm and steady voice, still pointing the gun at his forehead. A wise man would know that the calmer your opponent was, the more danger you were in, but this idiot was far from wise. I took the time it required for the white trash piece of shit to process my words and actions to glance around the room. A beaten and shaken older woman cowered against the wallpaper-torn wall a few feet away from me. By her wide-eyed stare and her frozen stance, I wasn't sure if she was more afraid of the man beating her or me. I didn't really give a fuck either way. Blood dripped from a gash near her eye, and her lip was busted so bad that I knew she would need stitches for both wounds. The woman was definitely used and abused. She appeared weathered and worn, but it could very well be years of living a brutal life deceiving me. Cheeks sunken in, lusterless hair, skin full of pockmarks. She was hard on the surface, though her eyes told a story of a frightened and scared woman. The apartment was shitty. Not that I expected anything else in an apartment like this. The couch looked worse than something you would see for free on the curb right before a Monday morning garbage day. The rest of the furniture wasn't any better, and the room smelled like stale cigarettes and cat piss. Finally, the fear set in for the man. He raised his hands and took a few steps back.
"I don't want any problems, dude. I have no beef with you."
"You do that to her?" I asked, nodding toward the bloodied woman. He swallowed hard and took another half step back.
"Listen, man, I don't know who you are, but I got nothing to offer you. I'm broke. That dirty old whore owes me money for last night's jobs. Go ahead and get the money from her. It's yours. Like I said, I want no trouble."
Of course he would say those words. I was the one with the fucking gun pointed at his head. Damn pimp and whore situation. I hated these more than anything. No woman should ever be owned, especially by a dirty prick like this man nearly shitting himself before me. Pimps were the sickest of all men. I ran with ruthless fuckers. I knew the bad guys and would rarely judge. Monsters among men. But not dirty street pimps. I fucking hated pimps.
"You owe him money?"
I asked the woman. She shook her head.
"I got jumped last night. I didn't collect. I lost everything."
When she opened her mouth to speak, I could see she was missing most of her teeth, and what remained were stained and crooked.
"Lying cunt,"
the man snapped. Without hesitation, I struck the side of his head with the weight of my gun. He stumbled back until he fell against the wall, lifting his dirt-encrusted hand to the blood dripping from the wound near his temple.
"Don't ever call a woman that name," I lectured in the same even-toned voice I had been using since entering the apartment.
I looked back at the woman.
"Are you lying?"
She shook her head as tears cascaded down her bruised face.
"No, sir, I swear it."
Her body shook, and when she went to wrap her arms around her skinny frame, I saw the track marks running along her inner arm. Junkie or not, she didn't deserve a beating.
"Did he do this to you?"
I asked, using my free hand to motion up and down her body. She nodded.
"Does he do this to you often?"
She nodded again, shame adding to the fear on her face.
"What would you like me to do?"
I asked. The pimp asshole remained frozen against the wall. I knew he would. I wasn't concerned he would try anything. A good pistol whipping had a way of making a man compliant.
"Excuse me?"
she asked in a frail voice.
"I asked you what you wanted me to do, to him."
She glanced at her attacker and then back at me.
"Make him leave me alone."
"Forever?"
I asked to clarify. She nodded as she looked back at the man I had no doubt caused her great misery. For a few moments I saw courage and dignity wash over her eyes, but it quickly disappeared when the dumb fuck said,
"Shut your mouth. If it weren't for me, you wouldn't even have a roof over your head, bitch."
I hit him again with the gun, harder this time, causing his head to slam against the wall, knocking off a nearby picture. The sound of breaking glass blended with his own cry. Yeah, that shit hurt. Being hit with a gun was nowhere near like being hit with a fist. I knew this, and now this asshole sure as hell did as well.
"If I left here, would he leave you alone? Tomorrow? The day after that?"
I asked, turning my attention back to the woman. She looked down at the stained carpet and shook her head.
"He'll never leave me alone."
I could barely hear the words coming from her bloody lips. But you want him to? I asked. She nodded.
So much so, but...
I took hold of the cheap polyester-covered arm of the pimp jackass and pushed him into the bathroom a few feet away. He stumbled but didn't resist. I shoved him up against the chipped bathtub with an ugly plastic floral shower curtain behind him. I pointed my gun to his head again.
Please, man, he begged. I'll leave. I'll never return, whatever you want.
I inhaled deeply. The smell of fear. Fuck yeah. His eyes narrowed in on the tattoo of the skull that took up the entire front of my throat. Red eyes of death staring back at him. Every man I killed who actually saw me always looked at my tattoo right before I pulled the trigger. It would be the last thing they would see. The skull, with red eyes.
I'll leave and never say a word. I'll never see her again, never, I swear it.
Was his one last plea. No, you won't, I said, as I pulled the trigger and shot the bastard through the eye with the ease of an assassin. No feeling, no care. No remorse. His body fell backward into the tub, pulling the shower curtain down with him. A little trick I had learned along the way on my career path. Kept shit clean. He was all wrapped up with the blood pouring onto the plastic, and if any escaped, the tub would catch the rest. Easy. Clean. No mess. No blood on my shoes. I placed the gun back in my waistband against my spine and went to the rusted bathroom sink to wash my hands and to clean the splattered blood off my face. It wasn't the blood that bothered me as much as the surroundings I wanted to cleanse myself from. I fucking hated dirt and grime. Germ freak? Maybe. But I fucking hated it. After washing my face and hands and using my own pants to dry them because I didn't trust the shabby mauve towel hanging nearby, I walked out to where the woman stood. She hadn't moved an inch. She was terrified. I could see it in how she cowered against the wall and trembled. I could hear it in her rapid breathing, and fuck, I could smell it. My cock twitched, but not enough to want to do anything about it. Done. He'll leave you alone forever. I reached into my pocket and pulled out a money clip. After paying off the landlord, I only had a little over $2,000 on me, but I knew it would mean the world to this woman. I handed it to her. Here, take this. Wait for 8 hours before calling the police. Tell them some man stormed in claiming he wanted his drug money and then shot him. I had used a silencer, so I doubted anyone really had heard the gunshot, and even if they did, I doubted they gave a fuck. It wasn't their problem. Those who lived in hellholes like this didn't make other people's problems theirs. Tentatively, she reached out and took the wad of cash.
Okay. Thank you.
Her voice cracked. Many people would say something to her about not shooting it all into her arm or to get out of the roach-infested apartment. But I wouldn't. Why? Who cares? It wasn't like I would keep track of her. The reality was she would still march down her fucked up and dark path. We all did. Her story was already written, and she already had her ending. I sure as fuck wasn't the hero in her story. I was the goddamn villain in it.
2. Marlo Masters. When I was a little girl, I wanted to stare the monster in my closet straight in the eye. I was never the child who asked for the light to be left on or the door to be cracked. I wanted it black as it would go in the tiny room I shared with my two younger sisters in hopes he would come. I'd fight to keep my eyes open, staring at the blackness of my open closet, waiting. He never showed himself. Night after night, I waited for a glimpse of his red eyes and pointed teeth I had imagined he'd have. But nothing. I never saw the boogeyman, no matter how hard I had tried. So maybe that was why I felt the way I felt now, and why I did what I did. Why I watched him. Why I lusted for the man. Craved him in a way I had craved no other. Harley Crow. I didn't care if he was a killer, like they said. A monster, the bad guy, even the devil himself. In fact, it made me want him more. One glance, one tiny look was all I wanted from the man, but unfortunately never got. Night after night, week after week, I worked my waitress shift at Spiked Roses in the heart of New Orleans and all but stalked his ass. I studied him, memorized his every move. I actually felt as if I could hear his heartbeat from a distance, smell his deadly essence from afar. Deadly, for one smell would surely be my undoing. He drank his vodka chilled. No ice, nothing mixed with it. Just chilled vodka. He wore black, always black and nothing more. His hair was black, facial hair too, and though I could never get close enough to see, I had always assumed his eyes were black as well. Black. All black. He blended in with the shadows of the club. Unlike the other rich fucks who frequented this members-only gentleman's club, Spiked Roses, he never wore a suit or tie. By his appearance alone, you would have no idea he was a wealthy man. The only giveaway was that he was one of the owners of the club. The men's club, full of billionaires and ruthless power players of the world. He was different than the rest of them. I could see it. I could feel it. And maybe that was why I couldn't stop my sick infatuation for this man I had never met, no matter how hard I tried. Tattoos. He had tattoos on almost every inch of exposed flesh I could see. His hands were inked, including his knuckles. His neck. His neck was what captivated me the most. A tattoo of a skull with red eyes rested against his Adam's apple. The red eyes, just like the boogeyman I had waited my entire childhood to get a glimpse of. Harley Crow. He was the boogeyman. He always sat at the same table in the same chair, staring ahead and watching the room, but never watching me. Although I watched him, I couldn't help it. And when I wasn't watching him, I'd fantasize about what his body would feel like against mine, how his touch would scorch my flesh only to have the tip of his tongue soothe the burn. "Girl, you are about 2 seconds away from me locking your Latina ass up in the loony bin," a thick, southern-accented voice said from behind me. I didn't jump, but it did snap me out of my Harley Crow trance enough to turn around to see my manager, Tennessee Charles, with his hands on his hips, looking at me with his firm stare. I glanced back at Harley longingly. "Why does your cracker ass insist on me always wearing the red lace costume? I could rock the black leather, and you know it." Tennessee ran a tight ship and was definitely a boss none of the girls would cross, but he did allow sarcastic banter. Hell, it was almost a job requirement of his for you to do so. He acted as the house mother for all the women who worked the club, and he was the one who decided what the staff wore. There were two choices, red lace with diamonds, or black leather and a collar with a silver chain. Certain tables of the club were to be served by the red lace girls, and the other tables, ones that had a hook to fasten the chain around the waitress's neck, were the tables served by the girls in the black leather uniform. Harley Crow, unfortunately, always sat at the table the black leather girls would serve. Tennessee rolled his eyes. "So you can become crazy psycho girl to that poor man? No thank you." He ran his gaze down my body. "Besides, chica, that Mexican booty of yours fills out that red dress like no other. Hell, you could turn a gay man straight. Not my gay ass, but some other weaker fool." He chuckled, and it was hard not to smile at his pathetic attempt at speaking any form of Spanish to me. Bless his heart, as his southern self would say. The way he spoke always amused me. He could be a real pain in my ass, but he was by far the best supervisor I had ever had. "One night is all I ask. Then you can commit me to the loony bin. It'd be worth it," I said, looking back at where Harley sat and sipped out of his crystal tumbler. He seemed broodier than normal tonight, though every time I saw him he possessed some level of melancholy. "I just want him to notice me. I've worked here for almost a year, and I don't think he even knows I exist." And why in the world would I want to give you even one night to make a fool of yourself? Girl, you practically have drool dripping off your chin. You should thank me. I'm saving you from yourself. And you're just asking for trouble. That man kills people. For money. Can you imagine taking that fellow home to dinner to meet your mama? Oh, lordy no. Lordy, lordy, lordy no. He flew his hands in the air above him dramatically, looking up at the ceiling in the most theatrical way, which reminded me of an old black woman in a Southern Baptist church who had just found Jesus. Tennessee, come on. Call me a twat or a cockblock all you want, but hell to the no. And besides, that long black hair of yours combined with the leather leotard would make you look like a damn vampire. We ain't no gothic bodice-ripper novel here. No, ma'am. You will just have to do your job, serve those damn drinks waiting for you at the bar to the other rich fucks in here, and keep your mind off that bad boy. He glanced at Harley and then back at me. Didn't your mama ever tell you to stay away from the bad boys? I shook my head. My father was the leader of a Mexican motorcycle gang, so I think it's fair to say she liked her men bad. And she did. I was definitely my mother's daughter. You are such a liar, Tennessee said with a half laugh. Mexican motorcycle gang. Ha! You don't have that interesting of a past. You're boring like everyone else who moved to New Orleans in the hopes of some excitement. You probably grew up in the suburbs of Ohio watching reruns of Gilligan's Island like the rest of us. I smirked. If he only knew. And knew why I'd really moved to New Orleans. But I had no real desire to convince him otherwise. Or even go down the path of past memories and family drama. Who wanted that shit? I had always liked the rugged, the tattooed, and, frankly, in all my history with men, the assholes. I didn't like the new and shiny cars, but rather the truck with rusted parts. Which made it ironic that I worked in a place that literally reeked of money. The odor of decadence oozed from every single nook and cranny of this joint. Men drank booze out of fancy glasses that cost more than I made in an entire month, unless I did a tasting. The tasting room in Spiked Roses, and the tastings that occurred in that room, were a different story. I could make a shitload of money at one of those, and I had. Each tasting in the room would have a different theme for the night, revolving around sexual kinks, fantasies, or fetishes. Women who worked the tastings and engaged in the acts made more money than one could imagine. It was all about the contract. Everything that was expected to take place would be contracted out and followed to a T. Spiked Roses had a managing member by the name of Kenneth Saxon, a ball-buster attorney who made damn sure of it. He made sure all the details were laid out in black and white. No questions asked. I liked that. The rules were simple. Essentially, one of the men would own the girl for a night, a weekend, a week, or whatever was negotiated out in the contract, and for a hefty price. Completely consensual to both signing parties. Was it prostitution? It could be considered that, I suppose. Though I never allowed sex to be in my contracts. I would do everything else, but no rich dick was entering my pussy. It meant I didn't make as much money, and often the men would pass on me and choose another woman at the tasting instead, but I was fine with it. I would suck, just not fuck. It wasn't like I had some moral standing that prevented me from having sex, but none of the men who attended these tastings did it for me. They all lacked the asshole bad boy quality I guess I was foolishly attracted to. I actually liked sex, and I wanted to keep it that way. Having sex with some silver spoon-fed mama's boy would be the quickest way to kill whatever sexual drive I had. But I was usually willing to play whatever kinky game they wanted for a price. Just leave their cock out of my pussy. Would my parents be proud of me? No, but I had given up on trying to gain their approval a long time ago, and they had no room to talk. My savings account was larger than my mama or father had accumulated in a lifetime, but I refused to touch it. It was my safety net. My escape card, if I were to ever need it. I knew my youth and looks wouldn't last forever, and I had no real skills other than playing the classic Spanish guitar. A skill that hadn't served me 1 ounce of good up to this point of my life. I had learned a long time ago that strumming the strings and barely paying the bills was not a life I wanted to live. I glanced back at Harley, who sat with a sexy slouch in a leather chair, just begging for me to straddle him and ride his cock like no woman had ever done before. I would, too. I wouldn't hold back with that man. I just needed him to notice me. He clearly didn't like señoritas in red lace, and it was driving me crazy. Tennessee noticed where I stared and said, "Oh, you poor thing. You are just doomed for never settling down and finding a good man. Take my advice. You need to go flirt with one of those CEOs mingling around here, or find yourself a nice banker with a stick up his ass. They'll set you up nice and good, and you can go shop at Pottery Barn and get your nails done all purdy and shit. Messing around with the bad boys will only get you fucked. Fucked with no lube, and ain't no one wants any part of that. I carry my own lube, thank you very much, so I'm safe there," I said with a wink. Tennessee laughed, which was rich and full and could dominate an entire room with its volume. "Lordy, you are about to stroke my ass out. This conversation is over. Unless you want your ass fired, get to work. Stop getting your panties all wet over that man and get it together. Stalker is not a good look on you." "Fine," I said with a pout. "You really are a cockblock." "And a twat," he added with a devilish grin. Tennessee seemed pleased when I picked up my serving tray and started walking toward the bar. But then, as if a thought had just popped into his head, he added, "Are you doing a tasting tomorrow night? I don't have you down on my list of sign-ups." I shrugged with a slight grimace. "I'm kind of over those for a bit. The last barn-theme tasting weirded me out. I can't look at a cow the same way now." I stopped walking and looked over my shoulder at him with a smile. "I have a feeling that theme was your idea." He laughed. "Moo, motherfucker, moo." He laughed louder, but then he regained his composure as he straightened his silk cravat. "I'm serious, though. This tasting isn't like that one." "What's the theme?" I had done too many as it were. Though my bank account was happy, each time I engaged in sexual play with a stranger, I chipped away at my soul. And I worried I didn't have much more of my soul left to chip at. "Who's afraid of the dark?" He smiled with a mischievous sparkle in his eye. "I might let you wear a black dress so you can be that vampire gothic chick you were begging to be." "Go fuck yourself," I said playfully. Taking a second to think about it, I finally flicked the good angel who sat on my shoulder off and allowed the devil to take its place. "Yeah, I'll do it. Not like I have anything better to do. Who knows, maybe Harley Crow will be at this tasting." I knew that wouldn't be the case. Harley didn't go to any tastings. Since working at Spiked Roses, I had gone to every single one I thought he would attend, and was always disappointed that he never walked into the room. He didn't seem to have an interest in any of the women who worked at Spiked Roses. And I was pretty sure he wasn't in a relationship because he spent almost every evening at the club alone. It was always just him and his vodka, unless he sat and chatted with the other owners of the place. "Actually," Tennessee said, "he may. I heard from Kenneth that this is going to be one of their larger parties. It's a Spiked Roses recruitment event for new potential members to test the waters, so to speak. Last I heard, all managing members will be present. Now, whether they all participate or not is a different story." My heart skipped and I nearly dropped the tray I was holding. "He's going?" "Girl, don't make me ban you from the tasting," Tennessee warned. "If you embarrass yourself by acting like a pimple-poppin' screamin' fan at a boy band concert, I'll behave," I said a little too quickly, trying hard to not act like a giddy schoolgirl. I knew Tennessee really would prevent me from going if he felt I wouldn't follow tasting protocol. His eyes narrowed, but then he gave a nod. "Okay, I'll add you to the list. But if you act like a bubblegum pop groupie and fangirl all over his Diablo ass, I'll pull you from the event. And then I'll give you a switching like my mama did to me when I acted the fool, you hear? It was hard to take Tennessee seriously when his southern twang grew to epic levels, but I kept myself under control. Understood, I said with a serious face, knowing that there was a time to show him some respect, and this was it. Anything to not fuck up a chance of maybe being noticed by the man I literally hungered for. Tennessee shook his head as he turned to walk away from me. Miss Marlowe Masters, I do not know what I am going to do with your crazy Mexican ass. Tennessee Charles was one to talk. Watching him walk to the iron railing staircase to go to the second level, I took in his choice of attire for the evening. It was always a smoking jacket made of the boldest yet classiest material. Tonight was burgundy velvet accentuated with his classic trademark cravat that you would never find him without. He was dapper. Dapper seemed to be the word that fit his style the best. But that man had no room to talk when it came to over-the-top actions. He lived and breathed the brink of crazy. He was right there with me on the nutcase train. Walking back to the bar in red pumps that I wished were black, I resisted the urge to look at Harley again. I needed to focus. Get it together. Tomorrow night in the tasting room could be my chance. Maybe. I thought about the theme and what it would mean. Who's afraid of the dark? Clever. Dark and twisted sex acts, no doubt. And I was completely fine with those. I preferred the darker tastings over most. The kinks always seemed to dip deeper into fantasy rather than reality. I liked to escape under the cloak of darkness. Hiding there kept me safe. What that said about me, I wasn't sure, but I had given up trying to analyze the way I was wired. You had to like my fire. I was the type of flame that burned with thick black smoke swirling around it. The kind that burned your lungs and watered your eyes. I was the flame that most wanted to extinguish rather than stoke. But Harley Crow? I felt he would dance naked around my fire with wild abandon. Naked and howling at the moon as he did so. I just needed a chance to show him where I burned.
3. Harley. We need everyone sitting in this room to be in the tasting room tonight, Kenneth Saxon said as he started the meeting with the 6 other managing members lounging around the large conference table. It's not your normal tasting. The man could be a real pain in my ass at times, since I wasn't one who liked being told what to do. But he was good for the club. His type A, strict personality helped keep the doors open, and I had to appreciate that fact. Each man brought something of value to the club, but my only contribution was that I brought fear. Enough people feared me, so, therefore, feared messing with spiked roses. A win in my book. I would use my fucked up notoriety if I needed to. At least my past was good for something. What's the theme for tonight? Victor Drayton asked. Victor enjoyed a good tasting, so I was pretty sure he didn't need Kenneth to coax him into attending. He always found new participants for his dollhouse in the tasting room. That fucker had some shadowed kinks I didn't even want to try to comprehend, and I was a dark motherfucker myself. But even I was no match for what I had heard about Victor and his dolls. His world-renowned art galleries were secret little fuckfests from the tales that were told about them. "Who's afraid of the dark?" Kenneth answered. "All about the fear, gentlemen. I'm sure this fits with many of your tastes. You don't have to engage or contract with any of the ladies if you don't want to. However, since we have invited several new potential members, Matthew believed it would look good to have all the managing members present. I agree. Part of what we sell at this club is the idea of brotherhood, so we want all of us in the same room to show it is present here at Spiked Roses, and they, too, want to become part of it." Matthew Price nodded. Besides Kenneth, Matthew also was crucial to the running of the club.
His ruthless CEO experience caused him to run a tight ship. That rich fuck made more money in the first 5 minutes he was awake than most made in a lifetime. When it came to business advice, we all knew to follow and do exactly as Matthew directed. I sure as hell knew nothing about running a business. I was along for the ride and would follow the marching orders from the experts.
What are the basic terms of the contract?
Alex Sheldon asks in his twangy Georgian accent.
I'm not sure my dirty old ass rolls that way. You gentlemen may have to do this tasting without me.
I wasn't alone in rolling my eyes, because we all knew Alec was just as sexually depraved as the rest of us. Having heard him talk in the past over a few drinks of rye, his cocktail of choice, that southern man, rooted in deep country traditions, made him a master not to be messed with. The weekend or a long weekend tops, not long term. Knife play, breath play, ropes, cages, chains, etc. This theme is a boundary pusher for sure.
Kenneth looked directly at Alec.
Like I said, you don't have to contract out, but come and have an aged whiskey, network, and lay on that southern charm of yours. There's a Saudi Arabian oil tycoon attending tonight, and I'm sure he would love to talk business with you. You oil men can talk about money and mud all night for all I care, but show the fuck up.
All right, fair enough, I'll be there.
Alec agreed, while everyone else seemed to be on board with attending as well. It would be my first tasting. Not that the idea didn't fascinate me and even tempt me at times, but I wasn't about connecting with a woman to that intense of a level. Engaging in a contract for days, putting rules in place, and interacting more than just a fuck and leave was way more than I was interested in. It was far more intimate than I was comfortable with. I also didn't believe in shitting where I worked. These women in the tasting room were technically my staff. It just felt wrong to even consider one of them for a plaything. But I would follow the marching orders and attend as I had promised Kenneth a couple of nights ago. And the theme of the night did intrigue me. It was exactly the flavor I would want to taste if I were to actually engage in one of the events. So I had promised Kenneth earlier when he spoke to me before the meeting to keep my mind open, not scare off the members with my moody self, and even consider contracting out with a woman. He believed that maybe I would find a girl who interested me. I doubted it since it really did seem too close to home and far too suffocating for my tastes. I didn't wake up in the morning with the women I fucked. Cuddles and kisses were definitely not the beats of the drum I marched to. He continued the meeting discussing the finances, general staffing issues, orders, late shipments, and all the other normal topics a business meeting would cover. I loved it. There was no talk about death, killing, revenge, bounties, and all the subjects of my past life. Spiked roses was my normal, or as close to normal as I was going to get. I felt as if I could loosen up and even joke around from time to time. It was a breath of fresh air in the polluted world I lived in.
Also, Kenneth said, I will be leaving next week for the long overdue vacation I've been promising Anita I would take her on. We'll be in Venice first, and then take in the rest of Europe from there. She's never been, and I haven't been in ages since all I do is fucking work all the time.
He nodded at Matthew.
I've gotten Matthew up to speed on my duties around here, but he isn't a fucking lawyer, so can you assholes please stay out of legal trouble while I'm gone?
He smiled, though I knew there was some truth in his statement. Spiked roses had managed to not get sued for a while, but we were bound for something to pop up any minute, knowing the crew who sat around this table, as well as the other members of the club.
You knocked that filly up yet? Alec asked.
Hell, Kenneth hasn't even popped the question, Lennon Wolf said. We all know I have a reputation for stealing things.
He gave Kenneth a wink.
He better act fast or I may steal her and take her for my own.
I'd known Lennon Wolf long before owning Spiked Roses. That lying, thieving fuck came damn close to swallowing the barrel of a gun many times, but somehow always mastered his way out of hot water. I hadn't liked him at first, but the man had grown on me. I realized that he truly was the smartest fuck who sat at this table of formidable men. There was so much beneath the surface, and that was what made me extra cautious when it came to him. Plus, I wouldn't put it past the shithead to steal my wallet.
Are you all done discussing my personal life that is none of your damn business?
Kenneth asked, trying to hide the smile that lurked in the corners of his mouth.
What goes on between Anita and me is none of any of your damn business. She doesn't work here anymore.
That fucker was one happy man, though he tried to play it off as if he wasn't always walking on cloud nine. His new love life with the lovely Anita Kyle had changed him. He was still the uptight prick we all loved running our joint, but we could now see that he was one happy uptight prick. I think each one of us who sat around the table envied the man in a way. We wouldn't admit it, of course, but I do think we envied him.
Last I checked, Kenneth continued on, we have a business to run. I just want to make sure that you all don't get our asses sued while I'm gone.
Aw, man, where's the fun in that?
Prince Roman said with a chuckle. He leaned back in his chair. It's been boring around here lately. I think it's time we mix things up, and what a better time to do so than when the cat's away.
I liked Prince Roman Kazian, and that was saying a lot. I usually hated royalty, and I had met quite a few. Their world revolved around dark and twisted secrets with candy-coated exteriors, and though Roman had his dark secrets and got whatever he wanted in life, he was by far the most stand-up man I knew. I would choose him for my side any day. Kenneth glared his way but didn't respond. He continued the meeting with,
"We have some power players coming tonight. Quite a few."
He looked at me and added, "Harley looked into all their backgrounds when the invites were sent, and though some are a bit shady, they aren't any shadier than the rest of us. Harley cleared them all in regards to what we will and won't accept. We did up security, however, just in case. I don't see there being any issues, but we don't know these assholes yet."
Kenneth paused, took a sip of his whiskey, and then continued on. "We don't have enough staff of our own interested in participating in this tasting, not for the number of men coming. So Victor has been gracious enough to lend us some of his dolls to help. I think we should be staffed enough for all the contract out if they desire, though my guess is that not all will. I think this night will be more about them seeing what we have to offer and what we are all about rather than bringing someone home to get kinky with."
"Also, next meeting," Matthew said, "we need to discuss the upcoming jazz festival coming into town. We normally don't allow drop-ins, but maybe we want to open up one night for it. Just a thought for you all to think about. The mayor is breathing down my neck on this one. He thinks we need to be a little less mysterious and exclusive and extend our civic duty more. I'm not sure about his angle on this fully, but I did tell him I would bring the topic to the table."
"I know there are some musicians performing whom I plan to bring as my guests," Lennon said.
"But that could be a good idea. That festival blows up New Orleans. Might as well profit off it."
He shrugged. "And keep the mayor happy if that's what he wants."
"Okay, well, if there isn't anything else," Kenneth said, pausing as he waited for someone to speak up.
"Then I'll adjourn this meeting."
"Actually, yes, one more thing," Matthew cut in. "Tennessee has had a suspicion for a few weeks that Ivy Adams may be using. Since we enacted the no-drug policy, I ordered mandatory drug tests for all the ladies. I didn't want to single her out in case Tennessee was wrong." Matthew took a long swig of his drink.
"He wasn't wrong. She tested positive for several substances."
"Then she's terminated. Simple," Kenneth announced.
"Ah, come on, man," Roman chimed in. "Maybe she just had a good time at a party or something. We can't just fire her ass and kick her out on the street. She's a sweet girl and doesn't strike me as a junkie. She's been with us for a while now. I like her."
"And she's a hot one," Lenny added.
Kenneth shook his head. "No, we have these rules set for a reason. We break them for her and then we break them for all. I'm not going to allow us to become a drug den again. We've worked hard to keep our place clean and I plan to keep it that way. I don't think I have to remind you guys that we had to clean house before, and once we allow one sick person in it, the disease will spread."
Kenneth looked at Roman, who had his arms crossed and was glaring.
"We aren't a fucking rehab center."
"She doesn't appear to be a junkie to me," Roman argued again.
"Yet," Kenneth retorted, "rules are rules. You and your goddamn rules. Pull that stick out of your ass sometimes, my friend. This is a woman's life we are talking about. I don't want to be the hard ass who always fires people."
"You don't have to. I will," Kenneth said, looking down at a stack of papers, signaling in his own way that the conversation was over.
"I'll take her," Victor chimed in, surprising us all with his words. I'll add her to my doll collection. I have a bunch of broken dolls, so even if she is a junkie... Kenneth shrugged. Fine by me, that's your mess if you want it. I have a way of fixing my broken toys, Victor said with an evil smile. Go ahead and ask her if she wants to. We'll present her with the options after the tasting, Matthew said. But I agree that she broke the rules of spiked roses, so she has to go.
Don't worry, Prince. I take good care of my toys. Ivy will be in good hands.
Victor smirked as he casually sipped from his scotch. All right, anything else? Kenneth asked again. When no one answered, he said, See you gentlemen later tonight.
Marlowe. All right, ladies, Tennessee began. The rules of the tasting room are like any other. Most of you are familiar with what they are, but for you sweet dolls visiting for the evening, I want you to read them over carefully. He passed a stack of papers around to each woman standing in the staff room before the event. Unlike the art shows and Mr. Drayton's galleries, no, and I repeat, no, sexual acts are to be done in the tasting room tonight. This is not a sex party. All that dark licking and nipping is to be done back in the gentleman's place of residence, or in one of the hotel rooms we have upstairs if it's been rented out for the night. The men know the rules, but I want to make sure you all understand that I don't want to see a hand job, a blow job, or even a peek of your ready little coochies. Save that shit for later. When the dolls just stared at Tennessee with their emotionless faces, he added, Read the rules right now. We aren't in the safe little dollhouse anymore, ladies. I didn't need to take a paper, but still did for show. This wasn't my first rodeo, and I knew what would be expected of me. So I took the time, rather than reading, to check out the infamous Drayton's dolls, whom we had heard rumors of. They belonged to Victor Drayton and worked his art shows at his galleries throughout the world. Not only did they act as the waitresses, the hostesses, and every staff member for the shows, but they also posed for most of the art as well as were part of live exhibits that people traveled around the world to see. And here they were, in this room, about to be my colleagues for Who's Afraid of the Dark. I wondered if they were afraid. They're dressed like dolls, my friend Ivy leaned over and whispered in my ear. Like the ones my crazy aunt gave me for Christmas every year when I was a kid. What did you expect? I asked, though I was fascinated by their attire just as much as Ivy was. Each woman wore a girly dress with ruffles at the hem, patent leather shoes with white socks, the lacy cuffs folded down. Some wore little white gloves, while others had ribbons or bows in their hair. They were all flawlessly attired. Everything was pressed to perfection, and the eyelashes. The eyelashes were what amazed me the most. They were massive, thick, and black. They looked like the dolls that would close their eyes if you laid them down, but pop right open when you'd stand them up. And each woman had absolutely perfect, stiff posture. They never slouched, never seemed to relax in the slightest. They were as stiff as a... doll. I don't understand it, Ivy whispered. Understand what? Why they would do it. We couldn't take our eyes off of them as Ivy and I whispered back and forth. Who knows? Money? People could wonder the same thing about us and why we would do a tasting, I said. I know. The doll angle just seems odd. Interesting, though. Oh, interesting as fuck, I agree, Ivy said. Do you think Victor has sex with all of them? I raised my shoulders and crinkled my nose. I don't know. Seems to be a lot of dolls to have sex with. But I've given up on trying to figure out what floats the boat of these spiked roses rich fucks. Unless that rich fuck is Harley Crow, Ivy teased. Exactly. I would get on any sick and twisted boat if Harley was the captain at the helm. Maybe tonight is your chance. I hope so, I confessed. But maybe this isn't his thing. What if he likes his sex simple and basic? I doubt it. One look at Harley and you can see that there is nothing simple and basic about him, Ivy countered. I don't know. I can't read him at all. I wish to fucking God I could. I heard that Victor Drayton sticks large dildos up the dolls' asses to help aid them in being so stiff, Ivy said, changing the subject back to her fascination with a light giggle. Like, really, really large, right up the poop chute in front of all the people at the art gallery. Well, that would certainly make me walk and stand stiffly, too. We both laughed, which drew some unwanted attention our way. Tennessee cleared his throat and glared in our direction. I'm going to assume that everyone in this room has read the contract before even agreeing to come here tonight. Remember that everything in it is negotiable. I will be working the tasting tonight, but every managing member will also be present. So unless you want Daddy, Tennessee pointed to himself with his two thumbs, to get mad and whip each of your tiny backsides, I advise you to behave, he said as he straightened his paisley cravat that accentuated his burnt orange smoking jacket. Only Tennessee Charles could pull off such loud and boisterous attire in a room full of black and elegance. So, if you are ready to sign the deal later tonight, signal for me to come over with a contract. But don't call me over until you have hashed it all out. I don't have time to be your mediator. Decide what hole is used, whose lube, and what dirty words need to be said. I don't want any part of your kinky rules. And keep your woo-ha's protected, ladies. Make sure those little wieners stay covered. No one wants the clap. He clapped his hands together hard to accentuate his choice of word, which startled many in the room. I saw that the loud noise even caused a couple of dolls to jump and break their proper stance. Those poor things. They had no idea what a tasting would be like. I could see it on their faces. They were downright terrified. And frankly, they should be. Though, in all fairness, by some of the stories I had heard about Drayton's dollhouse, a tasting may damn well be tame in comparison. It's a 3 to 4 day contract, nothing more, Tennessee continued. You don't have to have sex if you don't want to. If you are okay with giving it up, make sure to note that in the contract. Also, be sure to state any and all hard limits. I mean it. If you don't want the man to poo on you, say so. If you don't want the man to shove a baseball bat up your cooter, say so. Hard limits need to be in writing. Hell, you don't have to do a thing except stand there and look pretty if that's all you want to do. But you must all have manners and act respectfully to every guest in that room. And remember, ladies, sometimes the ugliest, shortest man has the biggest cock and the largest pocketbook. Keep the judging to yourselves. He paused and looked around. Are there any questions? Tennessee waited, and when no one asked anything, he concluded with, Well then, put your best southern pageant smiles on and go charm those dark fuckers. And don't forget, ladies, if you find out that you are indeed afraid of the dark once the lights are turned out, don't be crying for Daddy to hold your hand. You have to face that boogeyman head on once you sign that contract. 4. Marlowe. He came. Harley Crow actually came. I could almost feel him before I even saw him. I knew Tennessee had said all owners were attending, but I hadn't wanted to get my hopes up. It almost seemed unreal. Harley Crow and I were in the tasting room together. He would see me. I knew he would see me. It was just a matter of time until he'd peruse the women attending Who's Afraid of the Dark like everyone else did. And maybe, if I was lucky enough, he would stop at my assigned table. All the available women for contracting stood next to a high black glass table with rose petals scattered along the surface as well as the black marble floor. A single red candle in a black spiked vase sat in the middle of the table meant for two. Black and red were the colors of the room, just like the colors of the club. The gothic ambiance was perfect for the event. Large urns of long-stem red roses were placed around the room, and the massive chandelier, hanging from the ceiling, cast an almost eerie light over the male guests dressed in sleek suits and ties that evening. Even Harley Crow wore a suit. I damn near melted as I watched him while he spoke casually with the other gentlemen guests. His colorful tattoos peeked out from the edges of his respectable clothing, giving him an even more mysterious appearance than normal.